Morning, welcome back. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. The poet Michael Salzman joins me this morning. He's not only an acclaimed poet, he's also a neurosurgeon and a brain scientist. And those are actually not his only two professional interests, but these two particular interests are married beautifully in a new collection that he's edited. It's called Poetry in Medicine, an anthology of poems about doctors, patients, illness, and healing. Michael Salzman will be speaking at the Ivy Bookshop tomorrow night about the new book, and he joins me this morning in the studio. Good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning, Tom.
And speaking of poetry and medicine, you're coming to us with a tad of laryngitis here.
Yes, I am.
But thank you for soldiering on here. Right at the top of the book, in this beautiful preface that you wrote, you say that all of us are born patients. And in fact, you, at the age of 5, suffered from polio, and your cure for polio, you spent a lot of time in bed, and that sort of brought you to poetry, didn't you? And as well, it sort of brought you to medicine.
Yes, it made me a reader. And in the 1950s, the only two things you could do in bed was read and listen to the radio. And so that's what I did. And they were both activities of the imagination.
Yeah. So you grew up reading poems, literature, novels. Were you always drawn to poetry as a child, too?
I was. My earliest poetic interests were John Donne and Blake and Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah, Edgar Allan Poe, another famous Baltimorean. Yeah. Of course, the literature on poetry and medicine is, as you say in your beautiful introduction, it's voluminous, it's huge. I mean,
yes,
there's a lot. So you have cherry-picked about, 200-plus poems related to all aspects of medicine. That's a daunting challenge, to figure out how to wean it down.
It was very difficult. I could have made it twice as large, and for reasons, frankly, of cost at times and diversity, at the end, many wonderful things had to be cut out of the book.
Yeah, that's too bad. But you've organized this not chronologically, although the chronological scope of this is huge. I mean, you start basically, you start talking about the Hebrew Bible and the Aeneid, and you go right to contemporary times. But how have you chosen to organize it, then?
Well, we chose to organize it thematically, and it begins with the basics of the body, such as anatomy and physiology. It goes on through diseases that are characterized by fever or by blindness. Then it goes into surgical conditions. It has a section on poems about surgical procedures and diagnostic procedures. It has a pediatric section called From the Children's Ward. It has a section giving the viewpoints of the loved ones of the patient called From the Other Side of the Bed. And then it ends up really with convalescence and hospitals and leaving medical care. With a hopeful note, I think.
Yeah. And it's a really interesting and good way of organizing this, because you can sort of, go to those areas of medicine and healthcare that are of a particular interest or might be particularly resonant at a particular time in your life and see these incredible writers. I mean, there's Shakespeare in here. There's great American writers. There's great European poets. There's contemporary folks and people from antiquity. It's really quite something.
And it's interesting to see how people from different times dealt with similar problems.
Yeah, and you make note of the fact that the evolution, if you will, of the literature about medicine has paralleled in many ways the evolution of medicine itself. That's an interesting connection there.
Yes, and the medicine and poetry about medicine both have an explosion in the 19th century with the development of the modern hospital. And then also the types of poems, the subjects, seem to parallel the major contagion or infectious disease of a particular period.
Yeah, so there are poems about the plague and poems about tuberculosis, and then in our time, things like AIDS. It's interesting how these parallels are drawn, but do you think there is a difference, or is there a stasis, if you will, about how human beings have understood the mysteries and the art of medicine and the unknowns and the unknowables about our health and our well-being?
I think that the poems definitely become more and more sophisticated. They become more about the technology of medicine, They become perhaps less religious as time goes on. And of course, the subjects themselves make the change in the poems.
Michael Salzman is with me. He's the editor of a terrific new anthology of poems called Poetry and Medicine. It's an anthology about doctors, patients, illness, and healing. Narrative medicine is a subject that is now taught in medical school. So the training of young physicians now includes training about how to communicate, how to write and ponder and think about the science and the art of what you're doing. That's an interesting thing. Was that ever something that you encountered in your medical training?
Absolutely not. Hopkins actually is one of the pioneering institutions in bringing musical groups, classical music, to create some degree of humanistic sensitivity in their students. Columbia in New York actually takes the students to the different museums to study narrative painting and what it might teach them about their powers of observation as well as their empathy and their sympathy for the patient. And there are many schools now around the country that have a literature program. Rafael Campo, who's included in this book, has such a program at Harvard, and there are other programs around the country.
Yeah, I talked to a woman who edited a book about narrative medicine with examples of essays and stories, and it grew out of a column in Health Affairs Magazine, which is a sort of wonky, you know, public health journal, and they say that hands down, it's the most popular column in that magazine. Everybody turns to the narratives about patient care and those subjects first, and then they read the data.
Oh, that's amazing.
You know? Yeah, yeah. I mean, as a poet and with a person who has this great power of perception and observation, do you think that informs your work as a doctor?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it started very early for me in a sense because I fell in love with the Sherlock Holmes stories as a child and the power of observation of a physician and the ability to talk to the patient. And Dr. Bell, who was the model for Holmes in the Edinburgh Medical School where Conan Doyle studied, would stand in the well of the amphitheater and not even touch the patient. And by looking at the kinds of marks that were on the patient's fingers and hearing the kind of cough and knowing where he was working, would tell the students what the illness was.
Yeah, only in the movies, only in the books.
Yes.
Well, you talk about John Keats, famous poet who was also the first poet doctor. He was trained as a surgeon, I guess, although he never practiced medicine. Is that right?
Well, he's not the first poet physician. There have been poet physicians throughout history, actually. Rabelais was trained as a physician. Yehuda Halevi, the greatest poet of the Golden Age in Spain, was a philosopher and a poet besides being a physician. And Dante inscribed himself when he started out on a political career. He was part of the union, if you will, of physicians and apothecaries in Italy. So there have been a long chain of doctor writers and doctor poets. But certainly, without question, the greatest physician poet of all time is Keats, as being one of the greatest poets of all time. And he has the unique and heart-rending position of also having been nurse to his mother and his brother who died of tuberculosis and ultimately a victim of tuberculosis. So he was patient, nurse, and doctor.
Yeah, the full package of experience.
Full package.
You wrote a poem. One of the poems in this collection is by you. It's called The Apprentice Surgeon, and it invokes Keats. So maybe you could read that for us.
Oh, I'd love to. It carries an epigraph from the American poet Wallace Stevens, "Death is the mother of beauty." How awful for him to cut the flesh or watch, a deep cut made before carbolic acid, before ether, before hope was more than a wretch on the curb of the roadside, lungs etched with cavitation and fawn-colored phlegm. He knew how death would cork his mouth, killing his speech, its beauty a necessity. Keats was an apprentice then, to death, his own and all of life beyond its reach, the nightingale song, the clay of ancient Greece, and that season of reconciliation for which he longed. entombed in life, he felt no peace, despaired of fame, and got some of it wrong, while setting some right. Dreamed of autumnal skies, while standing at the bedside, attending to the horror at Guy's.
The poet Michael Salzman reading from the anthology he's edited. That's a poem that he himself wrote called The Apprentice Surgeon. Of course, we should make the point that you don't by any means include poems in here that are only by doctors and physicians. There are poems by, you know, a wide range of people. But you wanted to make, there are, I guess, a bunch of books and publications of work written by physicians like yourself. You happen to be a physician and a poet, but most of the folks represented in this collection are not in the medical field.
Yes, the vast majority are the greatest poets of history.
And when you choose poems like this. There are a bunch of poems, poets that you've chosen from Baltimore.
Yes.
And that's kind of a nice touch. We've got Clarinda Harris is in there. You are in there, of course. Mary Jo Salter is there. I wonder if you could read one of Mary Jo's poems, which I really enjoyed a lot. It's on page 343, towards the end of the collection. Mary Jo Salter, a poet who's on the faculty at Hopkins, lives here in Baltimore. This is a piece she wrote called Half a Double Sonnet.
It carries the epigraph for Ben. Half a double sonnet. Their ordeal over, now the only trouble was conveying somehow to a boy of three that for a week or two he'd be seeing double. Surely he wouldn't recall the surgery years later, but what about the psychic scars? And so, when the patch came off, they bought the toy he'd wanted most. He held it high. Two cars, he cried, and drove himself from joy to joy. Two baby sisters. One was enough of Claire, but who could complain, considering that another woman had stepped forward to take care of the girls, which left him all alone with mother. Victory. Even when he went to pee, he was seconded in his virility.
Michael Salzman, thank you so much for your time this morning. Get better. Hope your laryngitis heals up soon. And thanks for sharing these some of these beautiful poems from this great book. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Dr. Michael Salzman, he's edited and written the introduction to a collection of more than 200 poems called Poetry and Medicine, an anthology of poems about doctors, patients, illness, and healing. The foreword to the book is by the former Poet Laureate of Maryland, Michael Collier, who directs the Breadloaf Writers Conference and teaches at the University of Maryland. Now, both Michaels, Salzman and Collier, will be appearing at the Ivy Bookshop tomorrow night at 7 o'clock to talk about and read from this fascinating anthology. We've got a link to all the details and a link to a wonderful conversation with Michael Salzman and Aaron Henkin that aired on The Signal a while back. Come to WIPR.org/Maryland Morning. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. More coming up.